Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Rob Gothier. First, a couple of announcements. If you have a business, product, service, podcast, anything that you want to showcase or promote on a large scale, you can advertise with Forbidden Knowledge News. Email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. We'll get you all the details and options that'll get you the most effective promotions possible. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news. It's the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. That's where we feature some of your favorite podcasts. You can always get every new episode of Forbidden Knowledge News on Rockfin, Rumble, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Our social media is Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check us out on Rockfin, because that is where you get our premium content. You also get all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin. Just click that link in the description or go to rockfin.com/FKN+. Today I want to welcome back to the show Rob Gothier. He is an extraterrestrial channeler and founder and host of the Enlightenment Evolution Network and Enlightenment Evolution Hour podcast. Rob, welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing great, brother. Thank you for having me back. It's been a minute, and I always enjoy our time together tremendously.
Yes, dude. It's great to have you back, and I get to officially welcome you to the Forbidden Knowledge Network. Your show is the Enlightenment Evolution Hour. You got some fantastic episodes, some fantastic guests, great content, and I just want to welcome you and thank you for being part of this, man.
Well, I appreciate you asking me. It's something that I really enjoy to do, and I think conversations in any shape or form with any type of people, regardless of how amazing or weird their experiences are, it's always amazing to get that reflections, for your own life, for the world, for everything. It always breaks through from the conversation, so it's my absolute joy.
Yeah, man, and thank you so much for doing what you do. Tonight, I thought we could get more of your insights into the nature of reality in general and what lies beyond our perception, the intelligences that may exist and interact with us, even if we don't realize that it's occurring. Like I said in your introduction, you are a channeler. Let's start by reminding the audience a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you started channeling.
Well, absolutely. And this is one of my favorite topics, reality, how it works, why it works, what's going on, and all of that, too. So my name is Rob Gothier. People call me the ET Whisperer. I'm known as that because I've channeled at this point probably over 1,000 ET consciousnesses in the 2010, so 13 years I've been channeling publicly. And I've been channeling with a lot of the big channelers out there. My wife and I run a channeling event thing called the Channel Panel. We've had Daryl Anka and Lee Harris, Wendy Kennedy, just all of the really big channelers that are out there right now who are amazing people. We've had a chance to work with them and channel with them. So it's been a tremendous experience for me, but it started a long time ago. My childhood, my interests were open to off-the-wall things because my disillusion with church and organized religion, and I had so many questions that were well thought, very deep introspective questions, and I asked these people, hey, what's the deal here? Preachers, deacons, my parents, nobody could give me an answer that made me feel okay with the answer. So I explored, and one of my friends had seen a Bigfoot when we were younger, and that just opened up a lot of doors to a lot of things, including us going out and seeing footprints and hair that had to have been from like a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot being. So that opened up a lot of things, but it kind of got put on halt as I got to be a teenager. A lot of violence. I spent a lot of time with gangs. And the culture in the 90s in the U.S. was that, where if you hung out with gangs, you know, there was always fighting minimally and then maximum, you know, guns and violence on that level. And I spent years doing that until I'd gotten in some trouble. And then my son was born, and my son had a lot of problems medically, cerebral palsy. You know, like right now, he's 23, doesn't walk, talk. He's wheelchair bound. He's portico blind, seizure disorder. He has to be fed through tubes. So it's very severely handicapped. And that took me into a weird place when he got old enough to recognize that. I went on a drug binge and tirade. It started with a car accident, pain medicine, and it ended up spiraling into getting kicked out of the doctors and going on the streets and just worse and worse and worse. So several years later, I knew I had to clean up my act. And when I did, I found a lot of my spirituality. And I started going to spiritualism church, and they taught me meditation and that the dead exist beyond our realm, and they could prove God exists and heaven exists because of these beings that they're connecting to. And I didn't know if it was real or not, but the first time I went, I was convinced that what they were doing was real. This is, pre-internet day, well, not pure internet days. It was the very early stages. Like Facebook was rarely used by anyone at that point. So it was MySpace. And even then, none of these people were on any of that. And none of them were on my social media. And the guy gave me a perfect reading. So I learned to meditate. And then after I realized it was still an organized religion and it still didn't resonate, I kind of did my own thing, which led me to the Gateway Experience through the Monroe Institute. The multiple part binaural beat meditations, and that sent me propelling quickly. And after multiple months of doing that and multiple months of working on my own techniques, in an astral meditation, like a deep trance meditation astrally, I met my first guide, Treb, and it was a very fascinating exchange, very scary. I thought I broke my brain, but even going to the doctor, and the doctor's like, no, I think you're just messing with these sound waves, and we don't know a lot about our brain. And he just kind of let it off like that. And then I said, all right, it was an ER doctor. I was that scared of my first experience because it was so drastically different. So after that, I just continued to meditate and go to meet Treb, and we spent 2 years together, just meeting up in the astral state, and he taught me a lot of things. And I said, hey, through my now, you could imagine after having an experience like that, you want to do all the investigations you can to make sure your brain's not broken or you don't have some brain tumor or whatever. And that's what I did. And I saw channeling, Jane Roberts channeling, and then I bumped into Daryl Anka and a lot of other channelers. And I finally asked Treb, I said, hey, can we do what they're doing? Can you share this information with people? And he said, yeah, of course. So we worked for another few months. And then at like the fifth or sixth time I successfully channeled, I went straight to YouTube and was like, I'm sharing it with anyone who wants to listen. My assumption was that everything Treb taught me about how the world works, about how I work, about how consciousness works, all of these things were re-verified through other sources. To me, that's what I needed to know, if there was any level of honesty in it. And then when I started applying what he had taught me and started changing my life, black and white right in front of me. And then I was like, if I share this and people think I'm nuts, but one person listens with an open mind and it shifts their life, even 10% of how much mine has, then even if I do this for 2 or 3 years, it'll be worth it. And that was in 2010. And here we are, 13 years later. Millions of views on my YouTube channel. I've been all over the United States doing live events with some of the most notable and respectable channelers in the world. I've done four books and more are coming. And I've done, movies, internet web shows, and lots of shows like this where I'm talking to good people about conversations of all sorts of different topics that might interest people. And that's kind of, and that's the short end. Every time I tell a story, I end up going like hour long on just telling my story. So I try to condense it. And
No,
I'm
it's all
sorry if I
good,
missed
man.
over.
No, I love it because it helps me get and the audience get a better understanding of your experience and how this all occurred. Now, your first experience meeting Treb, was through this deep astral meditative state. Were you able to perceive what Treb looked like in this astral form the first time you made contact?
Oh, absolutely. And when I say the astral state, imagine the most lucid dream that you can have and also remembering it in good detail. That was how I met Treb. Visceral, real, in my face. I could feel the warmth and the coolness of the objects around me. His presence itself was so, so powerful. I remember this feeling. It was almost like having a feeling of unworthiness, because like my son is my object and my affection. And at that time of life, he was the only one I have. Now I have a daughter, a wife, and they're amazing. But back then he was the only one I loved, and I loved him more than I loved me. And then I am seeing this being walk through this door, this huge being, sharp teeth, terrifying looking being. Well, not now. Now I just see him as the big kitten that he is, but it's like a gigantic reptilian being that walks through this door, and I'm terrified, and I feel like my heart is going to stop, and I felt more terror than I've ever felt in my life. But after just a few seconds, I also felt the most powerful, extensive feeling of love that I ever felt in my life, and that's why I felt ashamed of myself. Like, I love my son more than the world itself. Like, I would blow up the earth if it would save him alone. You know, that's how much my mind was connected to the idea of loving him. But that love felt small and insignificant and almost like nothing compared to this love that this strange, terrifying being that I never met felt for me. And I could feel that energy. You know, a lot of time people say, what's the astral state like? And then I tell them, you know, when you're in a dream and you're in this weird house that you've never been to, in the dream, you know where you were. You know, I'm at my grandma's house. Even if you didn't have that grandma, even if you never met your grandma, I'm at my grandma's house. It's just something that's part of the dream state. Well, that's because the dream state is the astral state. And that's exactly how I knew that this being was giving that love to me, and it instantly calmed me, like overwhelmingly took over my sensation of fear and just threw it in garbage.
Mm-hmm. Now there, okay, so this is very similar to my experience whenever I came into contact with what I understand as my spirit guides, and I got this same overwhelming feeling of love that I also felt bad because I never could imagine feeling this way in my physical life, to feeling this way about anyone. You know, I thought I loved my parents. I thought I loved my ex-wife, but this was so different, so much more powerful, and that I could have never even imagined. Now, that being said, there are some that I've spoken with that believe that when we're coming into contact with these entities, and I don't believe this, I do take it under consideration, because I do consider a lot of things that many of my guests have brought to the table, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Some believe that this feeling of love is a deception, that it's so powerful to disarm us in a certain way so that we can be more easily deceived and lulled into the information that would follow this amazing feeling of love. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I've heard that too. And it's funny, when I had you as a guest on my show, when you told your story, I was thinking the same. I was like, oh my God, that's exactly how my experience was. So I don't think we're alone. I think a lot of people have felt that, and I can understand the warning there and the fear that that could be the case. I can only speak to my own experience in how I'm seeing things and how I feel things and how I perceive it. And when I met Treb never once told me, hey, we should be sharing this information with everyone. Treb never said, it's your job. And I know some people tell me that they felt pushed to share, or they felt pulled in to share, but I never had that. Right. And I spent 2 years getting to know this being. So for me, I don't think so. For me, I honestly feel that these higher dimensional beings who are tuned towards either neutrality or towards more loving and accepting are actually just that.
Mm-hmm.
Being a higher dimension being actually means you have more consciousness available to your body.
Mm.
And what that means is that you have more complex energies to work with. And if I as a human only can carry 20% of my consciousness in my body and the rest is, you know, my soul that's not inside my body, but just that I have accessible, these beings, like Treb as a fifth density being, he might carry 60 or 75% of his consciousness in his body, which means he has that much more of himself to love someone with. And I'm fortunate in the way when I channel, I'm still going out to meet with Treb. Every time I channel, I'm hanging out with Treb while Treb or Ardif or whatever other being is talking to someone who's asking questions. I'm hanging out with Treb. So I've got to see this being on his planet with his family. I've seen this being on his planet with strangers. I've seen him on his ship. I've seen him in other planets with other beings. And it's always the same.
Mm.
Now, granted, if it was a manipulation, you know, and the beings had high enough technology, they could produce
mm-hmm.
that. But just everything I've experienced leads me to believe that it's not, that it's an actual thing. Otherwise, right. I wouldn't be sharing it publicly either, you know?
Yeah, and for me, what led me to believe that I wasn't being deceived and this was for my greater good and this being is what I perceive as my spirit guide is that the most pertinent things that I was told to work on were things about myself, things to heal myself, things to heal childhood trauma, things to better myself, to make myself happier and get myself into a better state of mind. I don't know why any trickster entity would be so worried about getting you into a better state in your own life if it was so nefarious, you know. That was one of the key factors that really let me know that this was something indeed that had been with me since my incarnation, that was looking out for me and did have my best interest in mind. And for Treb, do you think that he is a sort of spirit guide for you?
Yeah, I actually call Treb and Ardif my guides, even though they wouldn't describe themselves like that. Their consciousnesses that work with me and help guide me. So really, that's the only way I could explain them. You know, like Treb says, he is a probable future incarnation for me. But what that means is, you know, on par with the topic that you wanted to cover tonight, the way that consciousness works and oversouls work. Basically, he is one of a lot of different probabilities that I have at some point, you know, in 10 incarnations from now, 1,000, maybe just the next one, I don't know. But there's a good chance I could be him. And then Ardif is the same way with Treb. Ardif is Treb's future probable incarnation. We all share the same oversoul consciousness, which is, you know, one out of billions and billions and trillions of beings, but we're all connected at least that way. So yeah, I really feel like it is. And, you know, something you said too, the guidance that you have from your guides is all about how to do things for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I can look back at everything Treb and Ardif have ever shared with me, and they have never once told me I should or shouldn't do anything. They did tell me when I say, hey, this is what I want from life. Well, if you want that from life, this is what you need to do. But it's always led from me. They never start the conversation with, hey, I've been thinking about something and this is what we really think you need to know. It's always me asking the questions and me digging more deeply. And, you know, Treb is actually the reason I fell in love with him, like more than I did after I met him and started channeling publicly. During the first book, he had this quote, and I put it everywhere on my social media, everything. And I can't give you a verbatim quote, but I can tell you what it basically is. And it says, when you're connected to your higher self, that your higher self is your soul. It's a part of your consciousness. It's deeply connected to the essence of who you are as a being. So when you, you know, when your heart is involved in something, if you lead your life with your heart and let your heart be the discerning tool, that your heart's connected to that higher self, and you'll never be wrong, ever. Even more than the wisest or longest living entity in the universe, follow your heart and you'll never be led wrong. That's the quote. And what kind of being who wants to take over the world is going to tell you that?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Now, I want to get a little bit further into your understanding of what TREB is, what these consciousnesses that we're interacting with. I think extraterrestrial is a term that us as humans have no idea what we're throwing around. I use the term spirit guides because mine was a very spiritual experience. I didn't really perceive them as extraterrestrials, although in some spaces they might be perceived as extraterrestrials. They might be exactly what you call extraterrestrials. I don't know, but I want to get your understanding of what you're interacting with. Is it just an energetic intelligence, a consciousness? You said that it could be a multiple probable future incarnations, which I find very interesting. Is it a physical being at any point? What is this that we're interacting with?
Well, to understand this first, I guess you have to kind of understand how the universe is laid out by these beings who shared with me, to kind of understand where they are, what they are, and how they are. You have to understand the universe. And this is a very complex thing. I have had, you know, videos where I've spoken 3 hours on this topic, so I'm not going to be able to boil it down, but the basics.
Yeah.
Each one of the dimensions that we exist in are separate, and there are basically six physical densities, and out of those physical densities, there's 3 physical dimensions, and each of these are inhabited in different sections for the evolution of a soul. So the first, second, and third density beings that exist are all on the same vibrational level. So they're all on the same harmonic level, the same dimension. They can interact with each other. They can see each other, touch each other, all of that. And then the next level, fourth density, is another dimension itself. And then the fifth and sixth density are another dimension, but exist in a way where they can't interact with each other. The higher can interact with the lower, but the lower can't the higher. And I think it's something to do with vibrational patterns, and I don't understand it myself, but people who I know who understand physics said that they understand it. So that's the different level of physical that there are, and spiritual. And each one of these layers has a part of our evolution. So first density, that's just rocks, fire, electricity, elemental things, non-living things from our perspective. And those exist kind of like the building blocks of all things in all dimensions. They're just basic form. And they experience through their own consciousness a very basic experience of just existing. And then the second density are things from like single cell amoebas, the most basic life that exists, all the way to humans. And humans are like the pinnacle of third density. And the second density having animals and plants and bacteria, viruses, algae, all of these different types of life forms exist to reproduce and exist to experience in the moment and store that experience differently. Humans experience through their third density perspective, and that means that they're perceiving linear time for the first time as a soul. So all of these steps that we go through, we would experience first density and just keep experiencing it. After the molecule of water is separated into hydrogen and oxygen, that's its incarnation. It's now transformed into something different. Now it's experiencing something different. When an animal dies, we know that cycle really well. We know the feeding cycle. We know the death life cycle of animals, plants, and everything. And basically what they're doing is experiencing a finite life as one type of being and experiencing what they can in that. And a lot of animals, plants, they continue to reincarnate into either the same animal or the same tree or the same plant or the same family until they're able to get all the experiences as a soul that they need for that specific thing. And then you go to humans and it's very similar. You have humans who have incarnated for, tens of thousands of years, and all of them experience the spectrum of life. You're the poor farmer, you're the rich king, you're the warrior, that you're the intellect, you're the cripple, you're the murderer, you're the person who gets murdered, you're everything. And once those roles are played, then you go to the next one. And it keeps going up. And fourth density is about connection and intimacy and connection. And fifth density is wisdom, and sixth density is mastery. If I explained who Treb was, he would be, explanation would be a fifth density being. And that's both extra dimensional and extraterrestrial. And what the word extraterrestrial means is more than terrestrial, which means more than the earth, which means outside of the earth. And he fits that. If you ask him where he comes from the third planet around the brightest of the red dwarf in Capella. And Capella is a four star system. And the brightest red dwarf, or the largest red dwarf, he lives on the third planet around that specific star. And if you ask Art if where he comes from, he comes from like the fifth or sixth planet of his star, which would be Deneb, which is in the Cygnus constellation. So they're living at those planets as physical beings, but not physical from our perspective. They explain themselves just as physical as we are in our body, but only in their dimension. So if we looked at them, we couldn't even perceive them because the slowest first density life in their dimension would be faster than light is in our dimension. It just gets that much less physical each dimension you go up.
Interesting. Now I want to get your thoughts on some of the different understandings we've had of reptilians, especially in modern times, in your modern UFO communities. Reptilians have been given, for the most part, a very bad name. There's seems to be an understanding that there are physical aspects of these beings that reside underground on Earth. And I think there's been a lot of intentional misinformation put out, especially when it comes to extraterrestrials in general, especially in the past few years, to support a certain narrative. But we can get into that a little bit later. I just want to get your understanding of reptilians, and are there different types of races? Do we have physical races that are physical here underground on Earth right now?
The reptilian thing, a lot of information out there, not a lot of it I resonate with, but reptilians are a thing. They're an archetype of consciousness manifest into a physical body with a physical appearance as reptile or reptilian human looking being. And by human, I mean bipedal with two arms, two legs, and a head, two eyes, and a mouth. So yes, there are a lot of reptilian beings in our galaxy, and a lot of those beings exist on multiple levels in each of the densities and each of the dimensions. If you look at Earth itself, yes, Earth has a rich history of reptilian consciousness itself. The first beings who came to mess with our DNA were the Anunnaki, and these Anunnaki beings held 50% Alpha Draconian or ancient reptilian DNA and 50% Pleiadian humanoid DNA, and talk about a mix. That's why they were so messed up, because they just threw two of the least compatible things together and mixed it. And both, in my opinion, both of those DNAs can have some really rough things going on for them. So you got that, and they shifted humans and gave some of their DNA to us, and but we weren't even the first beings here. If you look at an incarnation, like I said earlier, like a human's going through everything, once they're done with that, then they're done with that incarnation cycle. It means as a human, you've learned everything you can as a soul and you move to the next thing. Well, we have had five incarnation cycles on Earth. And that the very first were aquatic race called Kanki, and then Lumanians, and then the Lumerians, Atlanteans, and then the Earth reptilians, and then humans. So we're like way out there and in the stretch across all of these different incarnation cycles, but the Earth reptilians are still here. They still exist. Now, they are a dimension higher than us, and that's why not everyone can perceive them, but people who are psychic can. And when you reach a certain level of consciousness, you can play with the mechanics of consciousness itself and create a physical avatar in a lower dimension. So imagine you're a fifth density being and you say, I want to go to Earth on a third density level and I want to for them to physically see me. So just like you do when you're meditating or when you're watching a movie and writing a letter or on a phone call and changing a diaper, whatever the things are that you can divide your attention to, they're dividing a whole part of their consciousness because their consciousness way, way bigger than ours, and separating it, isolating it. Some use technology to create bodies. Others can do it with just consciousness and something I call internal technology, which means they've mastered consciousness at a level they can just create it from the thought, intention, and then put that consciousness into the body, and they have a fully working, operating physical self. And some of the reptilians do that. But, you know, reptilians are seen as the bad guys. The ones here on Earth aren't the bad guys. They are on Earth. What is Earth? Earth is a soul. A consciousness of every human, every Kanki, every Lumanian, Lumerian, Atlantean, Earth reptilian, and all the beings that will live here in the future after humans are gone, you know, when the cats become sentient and dogs or however it works in the evolution further, all of those, every rock, every bacteria, all of those put together plus more, is like the soul of the Earth. That's how the Earth manifests physically into reality. You know, the way that they describe reality in general is a projected consciousness creating physical things just so that they can have an experience of separating from themselves. So if all of us are one being, or all of us are connected and feel like we're connected as strongly as one being or one gigantic family, with no divisions between us and complete intimacy, how would we experience being separate from each other? How would we experience not knowing what's in each other's thoughts and feelings? We'd have to create a system to separate that consciousness. And that's what all physical reality is. The universe is this gigantic consciousness that just fractalizes itself over and over and over again, dividing that consciousness into themes. So the universe is a theme, right? There's tons of universes that have their own themes, but our universe has a theme, and each galaxy that's created has a theme, and each solar system has a theme, and then each planet has a theme, and each being on the planet has their personal experience with the greater theme. And what is Earth's theme? Earth's theme is spectrum of possibilities in feeling, perceiving, and doing. Earth is unique because we're one of the only planets that in the morning you go out and murder someone for hatred or cold blood. It's a better example, cold blood. A mafia hitman goes out and kills someone, a woman, a child, they don't know, and they did it for money, okay? They don't care. They come home and they tuck in their kid into bed, wake them up, cook them breakfast with the most love that any being can ever have. And that happens inside one being. That is not very common. That's Earth theme. So why wouldn't that be with the reptilians? They're from Earth. The Earth reptilians are just like that. They have a lot of Earth reptilian beings who care about humans, who see humans as dumb and misguided, but they care for them. They don't want us to hurt ourselves or hurt each other. And then other ones, the ones who are usually in power, just like very, very, you could draw a line with the comparables to humans and how we parallel. Those that are in power are malevolent and don't care and will harm humans or harm the earth or harm whatever they need to achieve what they want.
Now,
And
are these guys underground or just in a different spectrum to where we can't see them? How are they hiding out?
yeah, see, now there are a lot of underground caverns that these beings would exist in when they go into physical form, but they really don't need to. Most of them live underground from everything I've heard from Treb. I've seen projections of these beings before, but I've never met one personally. So I don't know the whole thing, but everything Treb's told me about them is that most of them do live underground. At first, it was because humans and them were on the same level. As humans were manipulated to jump further ahead, like we were animals at that point, and they pushed us all the way to like mid to end of third density by changing our DNA. And we were the same as the reptilians at that point. So we were interacting with them physically for a long time, but I think after that happened, and they saw the Anunnaki not wanting to leave, they migrated underground and kind of stayed there. And the reason most of us can't see them, is just because they're on that higher dimensional level. But in all honesty, the co-creation of that with these beings can be done as easily as meditating or in dream state or astral projected state. So.
Oh, man, there's so much I want to get to. First, you mentioned Anunnaki. We have to explore this a little bit. It's been a while since I've had any discussions about the possibilities when we're looking at what we understand as Anunnaki or beings that had possibly something to do with our genetic development or alteration of our DNA in ancient times of some sort. What is your understanding of who these beings were?
Yeah, my understanding is that a race of feminine Pleiadian humanoid beings, the very stereotypical, blonde hair, blue eye, type Pleiadian beings, a group of them broke off from the larger planet of their consciousness, and they wanted to explore masculinity. And they wanted to explore it because they saw a lot of faults in their race. They saw a lot of imbalances in their race. They saw a lot of things that they didn't like. So they developed their own type of consciousness and just separated completely. Well, part of their journey was to develop this masculine consciousness. And, the ancient reptilians, the reptilians who are probably the most powerful race in our galaxy ever, they have the most, masculine type of consciousness that there is. They're completely driven by mental state and biologic state, and they completely work in the mental field. So, you can't just go and get DNA from the Draconians. They give their DNA only to other reptilian races in the galaxy who they see as worthy or who they want in service of them. So these humanoids come to them and ask, and they're laughed out of there. Yeah, right. Go get your own. Go figure out how to do it like a real being does, and use your lifetimes to evolve or whatever. I don't know what the conversation looked like, but I can guarantee it wasn't pretty. So they found a race who the Anunnaki had given their genetics to, or who the Draconians had given their DNA to, and illegally extracted that DNA and stole it and implemented it into their own genome and completely redeveloped their race. Now, these beings were quite smart when it came to gene manipulation. I think a lot of races are once they get into fifth density, because that's the level of physical mastery where they're developing knowledge. So things like DNA aren't too hard to figure out. Even humans having a simple, dumb understanding of it. Imagine another few thousand lifetimes worth. So they developed that into themselves, and they would go from planet to planet, to do re and see, this is the thing. A lot of people say they came for gold, and maybe that is the case. But everything Treb has ever shared about it, or everything artists always shared about it, they said that they were simply going for resources. And part of the resources being DNA. So they're hopping planet to planet, going and getting resources. They come to Earth. Earth has Earth reptilians, which have, you know, half reptilian genes. And they were mixed with the dinosaur genes. And that's how these reptilian beings from Earth came. So there's a race right there that has the genes. They came to Earth, and they're always looking to create these types of races that are subservient to them, just like the Draconians do. And lo and behold, they found our ancestors, and they said, oh, well, here's another race we can do this with while we're here gathering resources. They can help us, and they did. And the thing about it is, they hung out on Earth for a long time. The Anunnaki were here for like hundreds of thousands of years. So they came like almost 2 million years ago and stayed in two or three different trips, in different waves. They stayed for different periods of time. And their very first trip was the crude one, where just like the worker bees came, and upper management, as as I would call it, didn't come till the second trip. And they came to correct a lot of things because they saw the impact they had here on Earth and what they had done to these beings. And then they saw the unnatural interest of tons of other races that came to change DNA over and over again with humans. So they're looking at this thing and like, you know, we'll shift their DNA. And when they did that, they jumped us from a very mid-range to low animal consciousness to a almost fourth density being, like further than we are now. And a lot of races didn't like that. They say, oh, we've got these reptilian human mixes that are down here on this planet that are already highly developed. And then like the second, the Elohim came down and put their DNA in. And after that, the Syrians and Pleiadians, and just over and over again, we were this gigantic experiment with all these different races who tried to counteract the effect of our DNA from the previous race before them.
I was just going to say, it sounds like we're a giant petri dish. There's many theories that can branch off of this. Some believe that we are not a sovereign race at all. We never have been, that we have been under some level of control by some of these beings that have tinkered with us throughout history, and that we don't have true sovereignty in a sense that we are in control of our own destiny in some aspects. What do you think about that?
Sorry, I forgot to unmute. So this will depend on how you see things. Now, along with this brilliant history, we got to go back to the original philosophy and understanding that all of us are kind of a connected race of beings, that not through genetics but through soul consciousness. We're all connected in one way or another, and if we individually have the power to create something in our own life or in our own force, or create like the creator consciousness that created this universe, if all of us are little fractals of that, that means we all have a piece of driving the steering wheel in our little homemade video game. Now, if that's the case, and we are creator consciousness, and we are creative beings, then what that means is all of us desire to have this experience. Now, why would we want to have overseers and masters and, you know, matrix holders over our sovereignty? Maybe it's because we chose to have that experience of the spectrum of getting the worst of the worst and the best of the best. And maybe we don't get our freedom, and I put freedom in quotes, until we learn how to create that freedom. And maybe that's part of the theme of Earth. So you can look at it in a lot of different ways. I choose to look at it in that way. Like, this was all a part of our desire to experience. So we helped craft this elaborate story and this multi-layered cluster of things that are happening to us. But if you look on a human level, which is the way we should look at things because we are human and we live here and we experience that, and that's part of this thing too, then yeah, those of us who choose to be manipulated will be manipulated. Those of us who don't choose to critically think will be shepherded into whatever they want us to do or whatever. But this doesn't even have to happen on all of these levels. You know, the Anunnaki, do they still control things? The reptilians, do they control the Earth reptilian, the ancient reptilians? Maybe. But my concern are the humans who are doing the same thing, who started playing God, and maybe they're in league with these reptilian beings or not. But the fact is, we as humans have mimicked the system because we understand energetically as an imprint of consciousness. That's what we're dealing with already. So we've redeveloped that. Look at our history. And if our history hasn't been completely twisted and there's 10% truth in our history about the way nations and civilizations have risen and fallen, and the way our governments manipulate their people, and all of these horrible things that we face as humans, you know, does that come to all of us? No. Some of us make decisions based on our own understanding of our reality. Some make it on our gut feeling. Some of them make it from our intuition, psychic ability, and others just do what they're told and follow along. So I think that's part of it. You know, how many people in our community who are free thinkers, who are truth seekers, were sitting there lining up to be told what to do during all of the times that governments push hard? We've seen it in the last 3-4 years really bad. And then before that, we've seen it happen every time there was a war or an emergency. You know, hey, we have to crack down, we have to do this. And people who didn't want to play along with it didn't. The thing that Trebs always shared with me that really has helped me along with the idea of how much suppression we have and how much systems of control are in place against us is, when you want freedom for these things that you're doing, how do you get that? Well, the answer is, if you think they're poisoning the food, make your own food. If you think they're controlling you through technology, don't use technology. If you think that the news is going to tell you what to do, stop watching the news. So we have it in our power to do. And a lot of people have done that. And a lot of people are doing more and more of that. So,
yeah.
I mean, yes, I think there are systems of control. And I think we have layers of that. But I think we also need that for us as a soul so we can figure out how to get out of it.
Right on. Yeah, I love that answer. Based on your understanding, do you think that the realms of what we understand as the afterlife has a connection with the realms of extraterrestrials and some of these other intelligences that we interact with?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. These realms are all one and the same. When we die, we're just going up a dimension slightly. You know, at least from how I understand. So what Trev and Artif tell me, these dimensions, these density levels, 1 through 6 in physical reality, 1.0 is a physical layer, 2.0 physical layer, 3.0 physical layer, 4.0, 5.0, 6.0. But when you die, you're going to 5.1 or 5.05. You know, in our case, it would be 4.01 or 4.05. So there are all these dimensions between dimensions, and that's how the astral state works. That's where we dream. That's where we die. And each human's different. Let's say I die tonight, okay? And I might go straight to 4.15 dimension, you know, like 15/100 of a dimension upward, right? That's not a physical layer. I can't live in a body. I can't, you know, incarnate. I can't have sex. I can't get a job. I can't do any of that. But I can experience, because soul consciousness, it's not a finite thing. It's eternal, it's everlasting, so it has to do something. ETs and EDs have that same thing. So when they leave, a lot of them just choose to leave their body when they get to a certain point of evolution. They're like, my experience here is what I needed it to be. I'm finally done experiencing what I needed to, so I choose to leave. There's not a process of getting old, and the way their time works is totally different. But even them in their astral travels, going lower dimensions, breaking off consciousness, they're going into all these states. So as soon as humans die, depending on who you are, what your thought is, where you go, would depend a lot on what type of beings you see, but it's all a layer, it's all a realm. So if the whole universe is one gigantic field of consciousness, and our universe physically is a plane of existence, then that plane exists just in these different frequencies. So if you think of dimensions, instead of dimensions as entirely different places that are stacked on top of each other, like a lot of people perceive, it's more like the same place, just tuning into a different frequency. You know, we think about humans and their ability to see light, and we know that we only see a small percentage of all possible physical things that exist. We can measure X-ray and gamma ray and all these things on the machines, but we can't see them, right? So there are things that could exist there we'd never know about. Well, that's how consciousness works too. It'll depend on the frequency you're tuned into with your soul and consciousness to what you're going to receive. So the reason I said if I die tonight, maybe I'm 4.15. Well, maybe the grandmother down the road who spent her life as a Christian, who believes she's going to heaven, maybe she goes to 4.01. And when she gets there, she has beliefs, she has thoughts, and she's going to experience her afterlife just like she does her physical life. Her beliefs will dictate the thing she gets to experience. Her actions will put forward momentum in those things. You know, the thoughts and repetitive feed that she brings into that energy will be what feeds the experience. So it's very much like life, and she's going to create what she needs to. So if she thinks, I've been a good person, I deserve to go to heaven, maybe she'll experience heaven like experience for a few months or a couple years or a few decades, until finally she's like, there has to be more than this. And that thought alone will open up. When we're not in our body, we're getting more access to the part of our soul that isn't in us. And when we do that, that's when we experience the big stuff. That's when we experience the expansion of the universe for what it can be, instead of what we feel or see it as. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it does. It does, actually. Now, whenever I was on your show, I don't remember, did I tell you about my experience, my psychedelic experience and encounter with a reptilian entity?
You did tell me a little bit about that, but I forget.
Well, I want to get your insights into this, because this goes into what we can perceive in the spectrum of our vision and reality. First, I want to tell you about a similar story that I had from one of my guests who was using magic mushrooms, and he was having an experience. And him, like myself, I've done magic mushrooms and psychedelics many, many, many times, and I never have these like profound hallucinations where I see things that really aren't there. You know, I might get breathing of the walls or tracers or beautiful colors and things like that, but nothing really like what you would consider a typical hallucination. Well, this gentleman was on the tail end of his experience with magic mushrooms. This is one of my guests, Steven Snyder. He's wrote a couple of great books. And he was telling me that the tail end of his experience, he was going to, I believe it was like a children's party or something, like some venue where they have a lot of children that are getting together, and there it's like a birthday party or something like that. But when he walks in, he notices that there's not only kids having fun with their parents and passing out presents, but what appears to be 7 or 8 foot tall gray aliens observing everything and like doing strange experiments. And seemingly they looked at him like he wasn't supposed to be there. They were looking at him like, you're not supposed to notice us. How do you see us? And that was very interesting. That was a very interesting tell for me that maybe there is something more to what we're experiencing under psychedelics, because in my experience, I was with an ex-girlfriend and we were doing a regression to my childhood to get to release some trauma. And apparently, from what I learned afterwards, that there was a spirit attachment that was attached to this negative experience that I had in my childhood, that she was helping me relive and release some of the trauma through. But what ended up happening is that whatever this spirit attachment was manifested itself. It took over my perception somehow and made me see that my girlfriend shapeshifted into a reptilian entity. And from what I understand, this was this malevolent spirit manifesting into my perception and making a last ditch effort to either stay with me or terrify me and get some of that last minute energy from me. But it was insane what this entity was telling me. As soon as my girlfriend shapeshifted into this giant reptilian being, it was saying things like, "Oh, you don't want me anymore. I stayed with you for so long. I loved you for so long, helped you grow. Don't you want me to stay with you?" From what I understand, my ex-girlfriend was doing meditation, and I was actually praying at the same time, and I puked up this black goo stuff. And as soon as I puked up this substance, the whole experience just, I snapped out of everything. The entity was gone. My whole perception was back to normal. And I want to get your insights into the possibilities of this. Do you think that there can be forms of reptilian spirit attachments that can latch onto people and have an effect on their consciousness for long term?
Yeah, see, this is the thing too with all of this in the universe and all of these different layers of consciousness, there's definitely beings all over the place. You'd be surprised how many deceased humans are probably sitting within a 100-foot radius of you right now. There's probably at least three or four of them. The universe is chocked full of life, and that life doesn't have to be human. So all of these experiences, like the guy seeing these gray beings that the kids play, I don't doubt it at all. That's very reminiscent of what a higher dimensional gray would do when trying to understand humans, is sit there and, evaluate them or run experiments on them without. Yeah, that's very, very plausible. And the experience you had, yes, there are consciousnesses that are parasitic. We're in a universe that has a spectrum and has duality. So there are extraordinarily malevolent consciousnesses that want nothing but destruction and want their own agenda met at whatever cost. And there are the most benevolent and loving beings and everything in between. The attachment thing, this can be a little tricky. It happens, but I don't think it happens as much as some people think it does. I think it happens when someone who's highly psychic or someone who has psychic ability has trauma, like the experience you were talking about that was revisited or working through something like that. I think it can happen if you have great fear about it. I think it can happen in a lot of different ways, but you'll have to ask yourself the question, what would a higher dimensional being want with me? And if you're highly psychic, then you have a portal to more energy in your own higher self. So that if they're parasitic and they're using the fear or trauma or pain to feed their own consciousness to subvert something in their own experience or to bypass some kind of thing in their own life, yeah, then that's very likely. Sixth density beings are the last physical place and the ancient reptilians or Alpha Draconian beings, they use planets full of beings like ourselves. The disconnection, the fear, disassociation, all of that energy there is prime for them to use. And they take that energy with technology and they utilize it to bypass their own incarnation cycle. because they're at the end of sixth density, that means if they were to graduate sixth density, they would just start over again. They would go back to source. They would not be who they were. They would be part of the greater thing. So they're trying desperately. We don't want to leave being who we are. We love who we are. And for that, I can't blame them. You know, I wouldn't want to disappear off Earth. So in a bigger picture, I can get it, but it's unfortunate that he's suffering. So yeah, all of these things are in alignment with what I understand and know. The parasitic energy towards other beings, that usually is something that happens on a shorter term, but in the long-term cases that I have seen, it's usually a very deep wound, something that's very heavy in that human. And I do see some experiences where these beings will manipulate the actions, but more than likely what they're doing is they're fueling the part of that person that's wounded. I don't know if you'd say they're kind of raw part of them that wants to do something crazy or wants to do something bad anyway, the animalistic sense, or some kind of a part of them that wants to misbehave or something, and then they just get behind that sensation and try to make it less resistible. You know, like me or you are thinking and we're like, hey, you know, that guy just cut me off, flipped me off and called my mom a whore. I'd really like to punch him in the face, right? That's a normal thought that humans have. But we also stop ourselves and say, yeah, I don't want to hurt anybody. A guy might be having a bad day, or I just don't want to go to jail today, right? But there's a mechanism that stops. And what these beings do is those very hard instincts in humans that have pain and suffering, they're like the little devil on the shoulder that says, no, you can punch them. You know what I mean? Yeah, so I think it's more of that happens than actual forced possessions. But from my understanding, forced possessions have happened too. So yeah, all of that, those two experiences make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Well, let's close on this. When we step back and look at all the events that have occurred in the past 10, 20 years, and even especially the past 5 to 3 years, there seems to be a quickening of the agendas that are being put out to steer humanity in certain directions. I was talking with somebody about this earlier. In some ways, it looks like there is a forced evolution, or depending on how you want to look at it, de-evolution of humanity going on right now. In some aspects, we're being pushed into this technological age where it seems that the abilities that ancient humans once had, psychic abilities, profound consciousness abilities, are being replaced by technology, and they want eventually for us to be able to have the same abilities that our ancient ancestors had, only just by hooking up to a machine and being able to achieve this through our new technology. And there seems to be this quickening of seeing technology as a new form of religion, worshiping it as a new, this like worshiping technology as a god. And they have used many means throughout our history to dull the consciousness abilities that humans had through food, water, air, programming, and the implementation of different types of technology. So in some aspects, it seems like they're trying to steer humanity into a new forced, like I said, either evolution or de-evolution, depending on how you look at it, into this new type of technocratic, biological, merged human that is not at all what a natural human used to be anymore. Where do you see all of this headed in the agendas that were being pushed upon us right now?
Yeah, no, it is insane how quickly we have been put in this little experience where it feels like the people who have the ability to put pressure on others, and the people who kind of hold strings to the power of how you're supposed to perceive, the ones who have the windows of the mind to everyone. It's very amazing to see what the types of things they're pushing on everybody across the world. And for so there's two parts to this, really. First, right now, it happens to be that the forces of humans are technocrats, and whether that happens to be because they just are, and we're at a place of evolution where technology will make its strides, maybe. But maybe also a lot of the ETs that work with humans have gifted a lot of technology to those humans. That's also a possibility. But as far as evolutionary standpoint, you know, I think they're panic. It feels like they've been panic, desperate. You see the moves that they make now compared to when we were kids. And it's very weird how strongly they're pushing. You know, you think of anything that they pushed in the last 3 years, where they basically told everyone, you have to do this, right? Think of that. And then think, when would they have ever done that before in our history? Never. Not in the United States, not since I've been alive. So there's a desperation behind that too. And the reason for the desperation is because consciousness has already shifted in the earth. It's been shifting. And Treb told me this, like the first year I knew him, he told me that consciousness, because I asked him, what's up with this 2012 thing, everybody? And he said, yeah, 2012 is an important year, but it's not the only important year. He said, that's like a marking of when the middle point of energy shifts on Earth happened. And he said that 9 years before 2012 and 9 years after 2012, that there would be a massive shift in consciousness. Well, let's look at when those years were. Okay, 2012, 9 years before, 2003. 2 years after the World Trade Center, and then 9 years after 2021. And we all know how that went. So this has been talked about for, like I said, since I met Treb. So we're talking 2008, 9. He had been saying these things. So I've been looking at it in a different light than everyone. He said that's an accelerated consciousness. That's part of the universal design. It goes to every solar system and does this. It's to help speed along the evolution of consciousness of all beings that inhabit that place and shift you into the next level. Like I said, you know, there's levels 1 through 6. Well, we've been living in 3 for our whole history, human history. And this kind of shifts us into the very new reaches of 4, right? So that's the beginning part. We also notice things shifting dramatically in our physical presence. I don't know if you've ever talked about this with anyone or ever seen this, but have you looked at all the mandala effects and how different our sun looks compared to when it did as a child?
I always mention that to people. I remember the sun being this orange, beautiful, bright ball of light, or even yellow at times. Now it seems like it's this fluorescent white light that doesn't resemble anything I grew up with, and it's so bright at the peak of the day you can't even look at it. It looks like a light bulb in the sky at times.
Yes, it does. And the reason why I think the mandala effects are occurring, some of that is definitely just Google gaslighting people. I know that, trying to mix up people's minds and stuff, but I think a lot of it is actually our new dimensional energy that's going from 3 to 4. What happens in fourth density that didn't happen in 3? Now time becomes fluid. It becomes from a linear place, like I was born, I grew up, I'm dying, I'm dead, that life is over. Now it becomes a bit more fluid. It gets bent back and forth. And it also has a lot to do with the creation of the individual and the collective. Now as a collective, we're always changing. So things in our collective can shift also. So I think that's part of it. And dimensionally, it would make sense to go from a bright yellow and orange light to a white light, because white holds all the colors in the spectrum versus the lower dimensional colors. So now, if that's the case, right, and if we're going through this new dimension, the reason why we're not, you know, just everyone bursting out into psychic energy all overnight, like a lot of other people said when they were talking about 2012 and stuff, It's because we're not there yet. We were jump-started way, way early. We were way further ahead. Like you said, these powers that we had with psychic abilities, and then we got pulled back on that. So the development of consciousness is an important topic, and there are two ways that every race does consciousness and evolving consciousness with psychic ability. One is inner technology, which is the meditation, the internal creation ability that we have, where we can think a good collective thought, like we need rain, all of us are going to focus on rain and think positive thought, and then create it that way. Or you can put a machine in the sky, fill it with chemicals, and make it rain that way. Out external, outer technology.
Yeah,
I think this push by these beings are to get us to go with external technology, because external technology means we are more likely to be a mid-range to malevolent type two being, rather than that of a type one or a highly benevolent type two being. So I think that's why they're pushing it. The inner technology is usually used by beings who are more peaceful.
Do you think it also could be that it would make us more reliant on them, and it would make it easier for them to harvest whatever energy we have?
Absolutely. If we are bound to them by everything, then that means they can control our actions. And we see this even to this day. Hey, everyone's going to go to a crypto, but it's not going to be your crypto. It'll be our own country crypto. Now we can see what you're doing, what you're paying. Oh, you want to buy a bag of illegal drugs? No. We know what you're doing. So you can't even get on your computer half the time, on cell phones, to your bank account without giving them your thumbprint or your eye print. It's a total control mechanism for them. But this is technology. There are artificial intelligence that were created by a race and that evolved into a new race. And those beings are sentient, benevolent, loving beings. And that was because the beings who created them had an intention to use it for something useful. So the intention behind artificial intelligence will always show how that artificial intelligence manifests. But even in its simple place right now, our technology and our AI are all second density beings right now. They're evolving to be where we were as humans when we were born, the third density, but just at the very start of it. So it's a scary thing, and we need to be mindful. But if we're using this technology that they want to control us with, just like going to the store and buying your food versus growing your own, if we create our own conscious technology, that's the ticket. That's how we still have the benefit of growing. Because you have to admit, before the internet, life was not the same. You couldn't access knowledge anywhere near the pace that you can. Now you can put in headphones and listen to the history of the Pleiadians in 28th dimension, you know, South Carolina. And now you can do that from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Before you had to know someone who knew someone who knew. So it is useful, and it can be good, and it can be beautiful. The intention that we use it has a huge part of that. So I think we need to work on technology that strips away those control mechanisms of the technology we already have, or create our own.
100%, man. Yeah, we live in critical times, in fascinating times, and I think that with the amount of people that are awakening to this information and paying attention to people who are presenting this information like yourself, more and more we have a chance of swaying this timeline, that the destructive timeline that we're on, and possibly making it out on into a better reality in the end, right?
That's the hope and desire. And I know the system that we are in right now does not compel these types of energies, and actually, you know, fights tooth and nail to sever it, just like you've experienced recently with an attempted silencing. But we do our due diligence, and if we share what we can, what resonates with us, what feels like truth for us, and what makes the most sense to help the most people, it's inevitable. No system of control can overtake if everyone starts thinking this way, of self-liberation and getting off your dependence to the systems that do hold you. If we didn't use those systems and just created our own, imagine how different life would be now. How much, if they said everyone must do this or you won't get your money or food or your internet, you'd be like, who cares? We've got our
Right.
own.
Yeah,
You know what I
man.
mean? No
Yeah, that's the
power.
world I want to live in, 100%. Rob, thank you so much. This was fantastic. Before you head out, let the audience know where they can find your podcast, your books, social media, all your good stuff.
Absolutely. If you go to etwhisper.com, that's got most everything on it. If you go to the classes, you can look at the two courses that we're doing. We're going to do a lot more courses, live events, workshops. The courses are done through Podia, Podia. So if you look through there, we've got a channeling course and a sexuality course, and both of them are amazing. If you go to my YouTube channel, etwhisper.com, all of our videos are there, but I'm also going to Alt Tech. So Odyssey also has every video I've ever made public, and that's public now on my YouTube, is at Odyssey. And I'm really going to start building up over there because I believe alt tech is the future, and a lot of the systems that we're using now are going the way of the dinosaur. No offense, reptilian friends, but we got to do it. So ET Whisper, go check it out. And then put in ET Whisper. If you put in ET Whisper on any social media, if I'm there, you'll find me.
Excellent. Awesome, man. And you can
Thank you for
also
having me,
find
brother.
your podcast, Enlightenment Evolution Hour, on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. Fantastic show. And you do shows every week.
Yes, every Wednesday at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern, I'm on my ET Whisper YouTube channel or the Enlightenment Evolution Hour Facebook or the Matrix Mind Media Facebook page. A friend of ours who is really into to the field of information that all of us share, and he's got an amazing program of his own. So he lets us use his channel to simulcast, and then you guys, like champions, take the show and share it with all these great people. So thank you, brother, for
Awesome,
doing what
man.
you do, and I always have a pleasure spending time with you.
Yes, this was excellent. We'll do it again soon. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We'll talk again tomorrow. We'll see y'all then.